Welcome to week 17 of the Spiritual Parenting Series, a series for parents and caregivers engaged in the spiritual practice of caring for and nurturing children. I'm Reverend Beth Dana, Minister of Faith Development at First Unitarian Church of Dallas, and each week in this series, I bring you a bit of inspiration from various writers on parenting. Whether you've paused to sit and listen to this or are listening on the go, I hope that you find some time to reflect on what this week's essay brings up. I'm going to light my chalice and invite you to light yours along with me if you have one there with you, as we begin our time together and bring our focus to this moment. Our weekly stories in this series come from a book called Chaos, Wonder, and the Spiritual Adventure of Parenting. And we are just embarking into the third section of this book. First, it was Waking, then Struggles with Love. And now the third section is called Embracing Life. The essay is At Black Horse Lake by Jonathan Johnson. Johnson is a writer, poet, and teacher who spreads his time and migrates between Upper Michigan, Idaho, Scotland, and Eastern Washington. He is the author of, among other things, a memoir entitled Hannah and the Mountain, Notes Toward a Wilderness Fatherhood. This is his essay, At Black Horse Lake. The world is what it is. Right now, for example, the last day of October, not terribly cold, wind is rustling the long dry grass and reeds along the shore of what's most accurately described as a small marsh under cumulus clouds on their way east through blue sky. The far horizon is pine in every direction, and in the little bit of pond that's left at the center of a muddy margin, there are six swans. They float a while, then stand, their bellies rising off the shallow, wind-rippled water, and flap their wings or arch their long necks over to work their beaks through their chest feathers. They settle back down and float. The clouds move over the sun, then the sun shows itself again, white on the spent duff of cattails along the tops of the reeds, even whiter on those swans. It is almost too cold to sit outside writing. But the wind stills and a magpie passes, pulling its long tail through the air, and the sun gets half a chance to warm my scalp and the black fleece on my back and shoulders, and there's that solitary, broken-off pine trunk rising from the cattails and reeds with bleached gray limbs. And amid all the pine and grass, there is one stand of aspen, yet another white, bone, and bare except for the faint shimmer of a very few brown leaves. In patches down close to the ground, with the dead pine needles and sticks, there is short grass that's not dry at all, but still green. It's been a warm autumn. The world is what it is. Far beyond the curve of the earth, where evening is coming by now, my mother died last winter. I couldn't tell you how many amputations she had. Toes, and then foot, shin, and more shin bone, more toes, and fingers knuckle to knuckle to nothing. The other foot, thumb, I've lost count. All of us love our private hyperboles. Here's mine. Her surgeon, a friend, stood in my family's house 2 days after she died, drink in his hand, and said he'd never seen a patient suffer so much. Later, when the house was full, people on every chair and along the couch and standing and sitting on the floor, my wife spoke and told a story from 2 summers before. Our daughter, Anya, who was 2 years old at the time, sat in my mother's lap as my mother sat in her wheelchair at the bottom of the ramp that leads gently down from the deck to the backyard. The mums there are long done by now, I suppose, the last of my mother's flowers to give up the year. And the birch, like these aspen, must be bare. My mother still had one foot on the summer day my wife was describing, and she used it to push herself and my daughter backward up the ramp to the deck. Then she told Anya to hold on, lifted the foot, and let the wheelchair roll down the ramp as they shouted with delight. They laughed at the bottom, and Anya said, "Again, Nana," and my mother obliged. My mother made my wife promise not to tell my father, the watcher and nurse of her open wounds, the one who knew what a fall could mean. Of her cluster of diseases, all that's worth saying is they were the kinds of things people get. Diabetes combined with a not uncommon small vessel and nerve condition called Raynaud's, and a related thing called crest scleroderma. Nothing particularly exotic, no keywords of dread. It was just that together, they slowly took her extremities after years of allowing in occasional infections, the antibiotics from which finally destroyed her kidneys. When her palms and the few remaining nubs of her fingers turned purple and white and black, and our friend the surgeon said all that was left to do was take everything to just below both elbows, and he admitted there wasn't much chance she'd outlast the operation by long, and the thrush in her mouth made it painful to talk, and the sores on her back and tailbone were raw to the flesh, and she was buried down under so many narcotics that it took great effort to climb to the surface and open her eyes and smile and say hello, she let go. There was so much to let go. While her body was being carved away and more hours of her days were spent on the business of surviving, her life had kept growing. Movies, cappuccino with my father in the car parked overlooking the lakeshore, her peonies and daylilies blooming in the last few years when this or that finger was withered and bandaged and she could no longer dig in the dirt I dug for her while she sat in her chair and supervised. And so much of Anya. Anya, my little sprite, she called her, running naked out in the backyard. Anya in her lap in the wheelchair, Anya propped up in bed beside her in the morning, both of them drinking from cups with spill-proof lids and big handles. And during that week back in February, the week my mother's doctors said she'd have left when she stopped going to dialysis, Anya turning, arms stretched above her head, turning her dance from dance class for my mother, who raised her head and lifted the unimaginable weight of her eyelids to see. But the hardest thing for my mother about losing my daughter, I would guess, wasn't the reality of never seeing her again, impossibly hard as that must have been, that bright little face fading away with everything else. From what I know of my mother, what was hardest about losing Anya was that there would be no more days to teach her. Anya is 4 now, or as she'd correct me, 4 and a half, Daddy. And though some of how she'll feel about her life has, I suppose, been settled by now, much of the quality of her relationship to her life still remains an open question, I know. As her father, I also know there's only so much I can do to affect what comes her way in that life. I'll work to preserve places like this little marsh of a lake for her. I'll teach her to be good to her body and spirit, to tend herself and surroundings with attentiveness. But precious little of what will be the tangible world for Anya is up to me, or her. The lesson my mother taught my daughter in the days they had together was not how to change the world. The lesson she taught and the lesson I must now keep teaching for her, the lesson I'm determined she'll keep teaching through me, is how to be at home in the world. The world is what the world is, and my mother loved it. Orphaned at 16, growing up to live what now seems so few healthy years, then for years enduring a body that slowly died from without, she loved to hold leaves in her hand, loved the way the seagulls walked, the voices of the geese passing low, the opportunity to speak kind words to someone for whom kind words may have been rare. What I get from being Anya's father and my mother's son, the specific purpose the two of them together give my life, is this. A duty to look on every day of this life as an opportunity for love. You can only teach what you know, and it is perhaps through teaching what you come to know something deepest, that you come to know something deepest in your soul. The wind picks up and I can feel it pushing on the car where I've taken refuge. It subsides and I roll down the window and can hear it like steady breath through thousands of pine needles. It picks up again, and the tall grass shuffles and tilts and crowds. She knew how it could hurt, but my mother loved this world more purely and unconditionally than anyone I've known. I have a good life, she said many times over the years, planting her emphasis on good so deep in my memory, I hear her clearly now. That and you don't get the days back. When she answered the phone nearly every night for the last 6 years, and it was my sister calling from one or another far-off city to tell about her latest struggle or latest joy, and I talk about her next trip home, my mother loved the world. When I held a rose blossom in my cupped hands to her nose during that last week, and she could only smile and not open her eyes, she loved the world. And when she still couldn't open her eyes, as my sister and father and I swabbed her sores clean as gently as we could and sang under the boardwalk, and she whispered, "Sounds good," she loved the world. And on that last day, propped up with pillows and every breath a fight through clenched teeth, when she opened her eyes and managed to say, "Help me," she loved the world. I know, because then, her eyes still looking into my eyes, she said, "I love you," her last words. The pine tree's shadows are getting long across the grass, and their needles quiver gold in the sunlight. I have work to do. This world is what it is, and I must love it. I must love it, and I must teach Anya to love it, a responsibility that is not just a reason to go on, but the greatest good fortune of my life. We drive out to this place together sometimes, lately to find and identify scat. We lean over some coyote or elk or goose's poop and poke it with our sticks and look for tiny bones and fur or the empty skins of berries. Lately, we've seen the animals themselves, these swans, an eagle, a coyote, elk, a porcupine shuffling along. Anya picks up pieces of moss and bark and little stones, but thus far no scat to take home for her collection. We have guidebooks to tell us the names of things, and we look them up. But mostly we just hold and look at them as one would with gifts from a beloved. As I expect she will, this wonderfully long, hollow shaft of some kind of grass I've broken off and will bring home to her now, token of this world as it is, what my mother gave us. And that is At Black Horse Lake by Jonathan Johnson. Now, in this essay, the author reflects on the death and loss of his mother. I wonder if you have grappled with the loss of a parent, and if you have, whether your experience is similar to or different from Johnson's. How did the loss of your parent change you as a parent to your own child? In this story, it affected Johnson profoundly in what he saw as his purpose that was given to him both by his mother and by his daughter. Now, it may seem strange that the first essay in this section called Embracing Life is about death, but I wonder why you think it fits here. Here's what I think. The author says of his mother, I love this line, while her body was being carved away and more hours of her days were spent on the business of surviving, her life had kept growing. And her life had kept growing because she was teaching her granddaughter Anya an important lesson about how to love the world and about how to be at home in the world. And Johnson feels a responsibility to continue teaching this to his daughter as she grows older. And in this way, his mother's life keeps growing. This is such a beautiful and bittersweet story about the legacies that are passed down generation to generation and the ways that someone can give others life even after their own physical life has ended. I wonder what important lesson or lessons you learned from your parents or grandparents that you feel a responsibility to pass along and teach to your children. Something to be thinking about in the coming week. Now, although I'm gone on sabbatical from now through the end of June, new stories will continue to come out each week from now until early March, and new listeners can continue to sign up for the weekly emails. So I encourage you to share this with others. May a deep peace and an expansive love abide in your heart and guide you on your way. And may you find ways to love the world as it is and to feel at home in that world. That is my hope and prayer for you and for your children today and all the days until we meet again.